Hello, Kathy.
Mercy,
hi. It's really nice to be able to interview you today. I'm interviewing Kathy Murphy, and we better put that your company is Kathleen Murphy,
right.
And your maiden name was McCutcheon, so we don't yet get you confused with another Kathleen Murphy who has been interviewed for BC History of Nursing Society, although she went by the nickname of Billy, so we want to be really sure we get the right Kathy. And my name is Ethel Warvenick, and I'm a member of the BC History of Nursing Society. And today is July the 26th, 2011, and I'm interviewing Kathy in the alumni office of the VGH School of Nursing Alumni. And Kathy, we've been planning this for about a year, so it's really great to be able to get it done today. And I think people know that a copy of the CD will be placed in the College of the Registered Nurses Association Library, where it can be lined up like a book, and the original copy is also kept in the archives of the college library, so there's a backup copy. And you did complete a biographical form, and that is on file also in the college library, and the original is out at our office at UBC. Do you have any questions before we begin?
No, not yet.
So I thought we could start by you telling us a bit about where you were born and where you grew up, and a little bit maybe about your family history.
Okay. I was born during the war in Fort Alberni, British Columbia, because my mother and her twin sister were raising us while our fathers and uncle were in the war. So after that, we moved to Vancouver, where I attended school, several different schools, David Lloyd George, and then Maple Grove, Point Grey, and then McGee. And in 1959, our father came home and said, well, we're moving to Castlegar. And we said, where is Castlegar? So we got out a map and realized it was in the West Kootenays. Was not too much road access. So we drove up there in 1959, and that's where I attended the last 2 years of high school, so at the Stanley Humphreys High School. So it was like reverse culture shock going from Pearsdale in Vancouver area up to Castlegar at the height of the Dukobor uprisings. Mm-hmm. After that, I was 17 when I graduated, so I had to kill a year, so I was able to get into UBC, and because I was now living out of town, I was able to live in residence, and my Vancouver friends were very jealous. And I had always wanted to go into nursing, so put in my application and was accepted for the September 1965 class that went in 1962.
Can we ask the question as to why you selected Vancouver General?
Well, it turned out that my aunt was a graduate from here in 1935, and I knew several people that had gone through the Vancouver General. I had never really even considered any other school, certainly not St. Paul's, and none on the island. So it was really, for me, the only one I wanted to. Plus, my grandmother just lived down the street on 12th and Hemlock, so she was going to be my family away from home while I was here, because my parents were still in Canada.
Yeah, you said in your biographical that you were the firstborn in your family, too.
I am, yes. I have two brothers and a sister. My one brother was 3 years younger, the next one is 7 years younger, and my sister is 9 years younger. Mm-hmm. The one brother has died. He died in 2000 of cancer. And so there's just the three of us left, and there are seven nieces and nephews.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you went to UBC before you came here.
Yes.
VGH.
Yeah. I took first year science.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really had never thought of taking UBC School of Nursing because with four children, finances were limited, and I really didn't think I could afford to go through the baccalaureate program. And as it turned out, I really wanted to have a program that wasn't necessarily focused on science, and so that's why I chose McGill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it was an arts degree in nursing.
Yeah. Because my question was, if you went to UBC, then why you didn't continue
on? Why I didn't go back.
But
yeah.
I understand. Because, I mean, that was one of the reasons why people came here, and I did too. Just because, you know, it was reasonable.
Yeah.
And the education was affordable for people.
Yeah. But living out of town, it was different for me. So So I worked for a year at BGH and put in an application for McGill. And it turned out that also that it was Expo. It was going to be in the intervening years between if I was accepted in 66, which I was. So I was able to study, stay in Montreal and work at Montreal General, and then finish my year in 68.
Mm-hmm.
So I did it in 2 years. We did 19 courses in 2 years.
So you got your degree in nursing.
Bachelor of Nursing, yeah.
So what year did you graduate from BGH then?
1965.
Yeah.
I just did the 1 year surgery.
Yeah.
On West 8, which was new to me. I had never worked in Centennial as a student, so it was like a brand new hospital.
Yeah.
Now,
just going back to your student time here at BGH, were there any teachers or nurses or people that stand out that maybe influenced you during those years that you can recall?
Yeah, well, Beverly DeGaulle was our director at that time, and she was very influential in our class. We, and Ms. King was also still the director of nursing, and our class, for some reason, she decided that she wanted to play bridge with us. And she used to come and teach us how to play bridge in the ballroom, in the lounges. And so often we'd have bridge sessions with Ms. King, and I don't know how many people knew about it, but it was our class that was...
I don't think anyone else has ever revealed that to me.
We had a wonderful class. People from all over, like from small towns, as well as many people from Vancouver City. And so it was a real mixture. And our class was kind of unique in terms of size. We had very small class members, and we had six of us that were 6 feet, 5'11 or 6 feet. In height. So it was kind of different. We were a real mixture. Yeah, fun
your,
class.
Yeah, your class has kept together though really well.
Yeah. Well, not everybody comes, but we do a reunion every 5 years and we do intervening newsletters as well. We keep track of each other. Yeah.
Now, going back to your student days, was there any experiences as a student that influenced you, or did you particularly enjoy a certain clinical area?
I didn't like the operating room because I was so tall. I would often hit the lights when smaller surgeons were there. I was not popular there. But, I enjoyed MedSurg. I really did. And, of course, Ms. Gillies was one of our favorite teachers. And we all loved Flossie Fleming. So that it was, there were many, many teachers that we enjoyed, including you, by the way. I particularly enjoyed the opportunity to work on the all-student unit with Faye Muser as the only registered nurse, as the head nurse, because we went there as seniors. I didn't do that as a junior, but I went there as seniors. And, boy, did we learn a lot. Mm-hmm. It was very exciting.
There was a student on all the shifts.
That's right.
She was the only RN.
Right.
So we had no supervision on
Some of the night shifts.
Evenings and
nights. Right. Yeah. Now, but we did have Miss Brown on evenings periodically. She was the evening instructor that would come around and Althea Brown. Yeah.
Oh, I know her. Yeah.
She came around and was there, but she was covering all the student units. You know. But it was, you were really responsible for those patients. And we thought we took pretty good care of them too. Yeah, we did.
So you felt fairly well prepared to do that.
I did.
Yeah, I
enjoyed the administration part of it, but I also enjoyed the teaching because, of course, we were teaching the junior students.
Oh, you had all levels of students.
Yeah, juniors and seniors.
Yeah. How long was that? How long were you there?
I think it was a two-month assignment. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a month. I think it was 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I know it was over Christmas because I didn't get to go home for Christmas. That was the first time I had been with my family, so that was a learning experience.
Yes. Yeah. Many people talk about life in residence, and those people who might be listening who have never had that experience. Could you just say a couple of words about that?
Oh, we had such a good time. Most of our class was on the sixth floor, and I remember my room, 666. And I am still friends with the three of us that live side by side. We are still buddies. And many people developed relationships with gals that lived on the same wing. It was the three-wing effort. And we would have parties. We would have all kinds of hijinks going on. And, of course, the lounges were particularly great for getting together and talking about experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We had a good time.
Yeah.
We really did.
Yes, I found one of the things that was very helpful, which people probably don't have today, was that when you came off the ship with your friends, you could talk about what happened, and it kind of like a debriefing, which we kind of call today. You kind of get that off your chest, and that was a very positive thing.
It was really helpful.
If you had a bad experience, your friends would kind of rally around. And
if you came off crumpled after pediatrics, and they said, "Okay, what happened today?"
Exactly.
You could laugh about some of the experiences, because not all of it was a happy time. No, it was. It was great, and you didn't want to. Particularly when your parents were out of town, you didn't want to burden them with something like that, because they weren't that close. Although we had parents of one of our good friends, and they took us on as adopted daughters, more or less, and we spent a lot of our days off in Burnaby in their homes. So it was great, but we didn't share information that with them. That wasn't appropriate. So, but it was important to have to have someone to talk to.
Anything else you
want to
add about some student experience?
Well, of course, always being a leader, being the firstborn, you tend to get into that. And I had been in leadership positions in high school, so I enjoyed the work of being involved in the student council working with Mrs. Miles.
Were you like the president of your class?
I was, and I was the president of the council. So I really enjoyed that. And the one thing that we really, really had a great time with was working with the residents, interns, and med students when we put on How to Succeed in Medicine Without Really Trying. Because we had some really talented people in our years, 65 and 64, that were great singers and dancers. And we put on this production that went for about 3 or 4 nights at Lord Bing Auditorium, which was kind of fun.
That's part of the hospital program
that
you were presenting the interns and doctors used to do
we were involved, and of course the script had to be reviewed because it was a little racy in some places.
Doctors weren't that great.
We had some wonderful singers. It was great. We had a lot of fun. Lots of memories.
So you graduated then in 65, and then you worked for a year?
Just a year in surgery, general surgery, with Amy Kellogg, who was also a BGH grad. And we had a lot of of my class, six of us were hired onto that unit. So we did, days, evenings, and nights in those days.
Eight-hour shifts.
Long shifts. And we had intermediate students with us and aides, no practical nurses. So it was busy because Centennial is a terribly designed unit.
I taught on the students on West State for quite a while, and it was running back and forth. You couldn't overdo it too hard.
I've never seen such a poorly designed building.
It was very,
very poorly designed.
Miles, I think.
At least now they have intercoms.
So then when did you decide then to go to McGill after?
Well, I knew that although I enjoyed the bedside work, I really knew that I would probably go into some kind of a leadership position. So I chose McGill because it had, the first year was you did clinical type focus. So it was med-surg, maternal child, psychiatry, or public health. So I chose med-surg, and one of my favorite teachers there was Murph Doyle, who also turned out to be a BGH grad. And then the next year you went into public health administration, or teaching. Now, I chose teaching, because I was really interested in doing that, and I knew the schools of nursing were still going at that point. So I did that, although we did get some administration as well, but it was more focused on teaching. Unfortunately, I was involved in an accident when I was there. On February the 12th, 1968, I was walking across the campus with another gal to go to the library to get a book. I was doing a sociology paper on the Duke of Boers because I lived in the Duke of Boer area in West Kootenay. And that was winter carnival time at McGill, and McGill is built on a hill. And there were a couple of first-year students trying out their chariot, which was basically just a sled. And it was on ice, and it was coming down, and they had no spotters, and they hit two of us. So I got the brunt of it and literally landed on the ice on my head. Rock Robertson was the principal at the time, a former surgeon from VGH. He was putting his coat on to go to lunch and saw the whole accident. So I don't remember too much because I remember coats being put on me, and then I was taken by ambulance up to the Victoria Hospital. and assessed. And by then, my roommate was waiting for me, came back, and they said, oh, Kathy's been rushed up to the hospital. So she came up. And by then, I'd been x-rayed, and they were going to let me go. And I got up to leave, and I said, oh, I don't feel very good. And at that point, I had a grand mal seizure.
Oh,
so what had happened was I was bleeding into my brain. So that was before everything, fax machines and everything. So they had to phone my father because they thought they were going to have to do burr holes, and he had to get out of Castle Guard to come down to do sign papers and things. And
you were a minor.
I was a minor, yeah. And so anyways... I was 24 at that point. Yeah.
But
they still needed parental. Because my roommate couldn't sign for me. Right. So they put me into MNI, the Metro Neurological Institute. Mm-hmm. And of course, typical nurse fashion, there was no bed, so they put me in a storage cupboard. And it was the old days where they padded the sides and everything. Unfortunately, they ran the wrong IV. There was all kinds. And Rock Robertson kept phoning, saying, how is this McCutcheon? They thought, who is this? And then these residents came in. Well, I had worked in neuro the summer before at Montreal General. They were all the fellows I'd worked with. They said, what are you doing here? I said, oh. So they observed me several days, and they had to keep me in hospital for a week because my EEG was abnormal. And then I discovered, because the fellow I was going with had come in and told me he was going to Cambridge or to Cornell the next year, and my roommate said, wasn't that neat that he's going to Cornell? I said, what are you talking about? And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And then I realized I had amnesia. So I talked to this neurosurgeon. He said, yeah, because of the grand mal seizure, you had amnesia. You'll have amnesia. So I said, I have to write my exams in like 6 weeks. And he said, well, you assess it the best you can. So they let me go home, but they said I couldn't leave Montreal until July because they were having to reassess my EEG. So it took me a while. I mean, my head was all mushy. And it took a while when I walked into a room and turned my head. It took a while to accommodate everything. So it was... So anyways, we had to move out of our apartment. I mean, everything was happening at the same time. So I wrote my exams, and I did pass, not brilliantly. But when I graduated, the whole engineering faculty stood and cheered.
Oh.
And, of course, in the newspaper, there was all things about, you know, and strange. My friends didn't want me to see the headlines because it was, you know, engineers and nurses. Anyways, they said, oh, you should be suing them. Well, they were first-year students. There was nothing we could do. It was just an accident. Yeah. So I just had to be monitored. So in the meantime, of course, I needed a job. And so I wrote St. Paul's, and Audrey Murray was doing hiring. And I said, I'll be honest with you. You know, I've had an accident, and this is a situation. I'm hoping my memory is okay. And she told me many years later, she said she hired me because I was honest.
Yes.
And then I'd sent my marks, and I hadn't remembered I had done that. She said I'd sent my marks so that she knew, you know, that I had passed, but that I was. Yeah. So I wasn't, my head was still a little strange, you know, for a while.
I'm sure.
Anyway.
Well, I didn't know about that.
That was a life changer.
Of course it was.
Because you didn't know, you know, whether you could remember everything, and then if there was going to be residual damage.
For your career, because you didn't
know. Yeah, I mean, here I had finished, you know, all this education. Yeah. I wasn't too sure whether I would be able to do it. But it was great. I worked, I taught surgery.
So you, this year, this kid that out, when you went to St. Paul's, what year was that then?
That was July of 68.
What was your job at St. Paul's?
I was the clinical instructor for surgery on 3 North. Yeah.
And you were teaching the St. Paul's
students, and I had first years and third years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's how they, so a lot of, you know, basic skills with the juniors, and then the seniors, of course, it was higher level, and we were doing open heart surgery on that unit at the time, so it was very challenging.
Did you have any UBC students as well?
Not at that time. No, not on that unit. No, because it was, we had a fair number of St. Paul students there. But I really enjoyed that. They taught in the block system. So it was a little bit different. So, and then I had to do hours and everything because they worked days and evenings. They didn't work days and nights.
You did the students' hours? Yeah.
Yeah, I did the students' hours. Yeah, and I did the hours for the instructor next door because she didn't like doing the hours. So I did hers as well. So I didn't mind doing them, you know, mathematically, you know, but getting everybody off when they wanted to be off was a challenge. But I really enjoyed teaching.
Yeah.
But that was 68. And then we knew that the school was going to be closing by 74. Mm-hmm. So Audrey Murray was going to come, and that was when St. Paul's was also changing from nuns as the senior nurse, as the director of nursing, and choosing lay administrators at that point. And so Audrey Murray became the first lay director of nursing. And the Sister Sabarin, Terry Schnur, was the previous one. And she left at that time to do other things. So Audrey interviewed a number of us who would be interested in changing direction, and that was when, in 1970, that's when a lot of changes were going on, and Audrey wanted to introduce a different method of delivering nursing care, and we introduced unit managers, really bumped up the unit secretary or the clerical clerk position, and then she hired me as a what did she call me? Clinical coordinator or something. Anyways, it was a coordinating position, but I was to go around and teach on all the units how this change was to affect everybody. And basically, we taught team nursing because we thought that was going to be the best way to deliver. We had practical nurses, registered nurses, student nurses, and we introduced this unit manager that was going to look after all the supplies, all the hours, all the behind-the-scenes stuff, mm-hmm. so the head nurse would be freed up to be clinical.
Right.
So it was really exciting for about 18 months I did that.
Yeah.
And got that launched. And then we made another change, and we called ourselves coordinators because we really didn't like the supervisor role. Mm-hmm. We used the supervisor role at St. Paul for shift supervisors. Mm-hmm. But clinical coordinators were there, and I kept saying, I am here to make sure that the patient is the focus. And so I worked behind the scenes. I worked a lot with the doctors to try and overcome some of their expectations, mm-hmm. shall we say, and to teach them, you know, what was going on with nursing, mm-hmm. and how we were changing. And that was a challenge,
yeah.
because the nurse-doctor games were being played very heavily in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's also when the Folks Report came out.
Yeah.
The Dick Folks Report came out. So there was changes going on provincially as well.
It was an exciting time, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot going on, and it was really exciting because Audrey was doing some things that hadn't been tried before, and so we were being asked to speak at the Nurse Administrators Association, mm-hmm. and to sort of bring people. We brought, even the government nurses came to see what we were doing, mm-hmm. like here in Orland, and mm-hmm. some of those people came too.
Yeah.
Because we were trying to shake things up a bit to make it more patient-focused.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you feel it was successful, the changes?
It was.
Yeah.
It was. It gave the nurses a lot more clinical responsibilities, I think, because they didn't have to, especially the head nurses, didn't have to worry about all that. Scut work and everything, but there were a lot of challenges. Like the one unit I worked with was urology, and on urology we had, unfortunately, an ineffective head nurse. But we had 10 orderlies on a 40-bed unit, and the orderlies ran the unit, and these were uneducated men. And so I tackled them, and there was a senior orderly, and they were. And when I looked at what they did, it was very little.
Mm-hmm.
And it impacted the nursing care,
mm-hmm.
because there weren't enough nurses there to do what they did. So periodically I'd work a shift.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, remember one time that they had two night nurses that had worked there ever since they graduated. One had worked there eventually for 43 years on night. You can imagine. The first thing they did when they came on duty was to put the coffee on and get the food laid out. I said, well, when do we do report? Because one of these senior nurses had fallen and broken her leg, and she was night shift over Christmas. I learned so much in doing her shifts over Christmas that I was able to bring, information that, and of course I had to work with it very carefully.
Yeah.
And a lot of things went on that were not what I would have liked to have had. Like, I was getting phone calls at home at night, and, you know, with no response. I had strange mail being delivered to me. Someone stole my hospital pin out of my locker. I was really weird things happening. So, but we weathered the storm, and we eventually got it down to a much more professional approach to nursing.
Yeah, that's stressful.
It was very stressful.
They kind of targeted you, weren't they?
They were, because I was.
Well, you called harassment.
I was a change agent, but I had to keep going because it was, you know, the eventual thing was that the care would be improved.
Well, they were trying to intimidate you.
Big time.
Yeah.
And they had some nurses that were, the orderlies had some nurses on their side as well.
Yeah.
One thing that changed that we had some three UBC students that came, and they wanted to do a slide tape teaching thing. So we said, well, why don't we do male catheterization? So we chose the chief orderly to do this. Well, he thought he was really great. And we really worked through this. We did a slide, and we had to do the storyboard and do everything out. And that got them on board, and they saw what I was trying to do. So I think that was a pivotal thing, too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting, but it wasn't a pleasant time.
No.
71.
No.
70, 71.
Yeah. So how long did you stay at St. Paul's then?
Well, I decided I needed to go back to school again.
Yes.
So, and of course, I looked at a master's program in San Francisco, and then realized I'd be paying four times the fees. So then I started looking around across Canada, and I looked at a friend of mine, well, from McGill days, was. She's a London grad, and she went down. She had to go down to Hamilton to do some work one day. And I said, I'll go with you because I'm interested in this, the Health Sciences Center in Hamilton at McMaster. So I went down there. I just happened to go, I was killing time. I went over to the School of Nursing and I saw this program, this Master's in Health Science. And they were teaching the health team together. So there were doctors, physios, nurses, social workers being taught. And it was a trial program. That's interesting. So I applied. And I got in. But I also thought I really needed to, I didn't have public health. So I took public health. In 73, I think I took it. I worked as a clinical still at St. Paul's. I juggled my hours. I took the classes. And I took a month of holidays and did my clinical experience with Ann Williams.
So you did, you took the
public health nursing, just the one course.
Oh, you just took one course.
Just the one course. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And then the other course, I took a psychology course, theory of personality, and then I took, which was pivotal to getting into McMaster, adult education, 412. And it was based on Malcolm Knowles, self-directed learning. And that's how they taught at McMaster. And that really triggered what I, and of course, my master, you had to talk your way in. You had to write a paper and to go down to be interviewed. And 18 of us were chosen.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was really, because we were only the fourth class, so we were still, they were still experimenting.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we could do it in a year and a half, which was another.
But did you have a thesis?
We did, it was called, comprehensive study.
Oh, yeah.
We had to do the basics. We had to have advisory committees and things like that. But it wasn't actually called a thesis.
Right.
Good for you.
So when you came out of that, did your career take a change at that point?
It did. I was the only one that was thinking about administration in that group because there was a lot of people that wanted to do clinical work. And they put me in an ICU in Hamilton, which was quite different. Because that's the master's. There's only one master's student there, master's grad there, and she was a clinical instructor for the ICU. But my comprehensive study was on patients' rights and responsibilities, and in the 70s that was a really big thing. So I did actually my study on a surgical unit, interviewing pre-op patients and asking them what their rights and responsibilities, they thought the responsibilities were. It was really interesting. I really enjoyed the study. So then I thought, well, I came back to St. Paul's. I went on a federal health training grant, so I had to come back and serve 2 months for every 1 month I was given money. So I came back and I was still in a clinical position, but in medicine this time. And at that point, the director of nursing was about to retire. And so three of us were interviewed for the position, and I wasn't chosen. And I was told later it was because of my assertiveness with the physicians, and I said I'm not surprised, because I did call them on several things that I did not think were appropriate.
Yeah.
And so another person was chosen. Unfortunately, they brought in a new administrator from the East, and he brought his own director of nursing. So she lost that position.
Oh, really?
So I started looking. I mean, I could have worked with her. That would have been no problem. But I started looking around, and I saw this little ad from Richmond General was looking for an assistant director of nursing. So I went out there in June of 79 and took on the assistant role. And then within 2 years, I was the
director.
Interesting.
Yes. And somewhere along the way, you met your husband in here.
Yes, it's over that time. When I came back from McMaster, we actually graduated 78, although we finished December 77. And a very good friend of mine's husband left her. And I said, well, I lived in a side-by-side duplex. Well, I said, you can move in next door because we always had, and the place was becoming empty. And then I said, and now we've got to start introducing you to some men. Mm-hmm. And I said, but, and I was actually going with a guy from Toronto. Mm-hmm. So I said, here we are, let's take a look at some UBC courses. So we found a 6-week course called How to Lead the Single Life. I said, here we are, it's just 6 lectures, and it's not even at UBC, it's at the West End Community Center. So off we went, and now we were, and so she was newly separated. I was a never married. There were divorcees, there were all kinds of, you know, widows, widowers, and we took 6 weeks of lectures. But after, we would go out for coffee or drinks with the people that were there. And we were sitting in a booth one day, Sue and I, and these two guys were sitting opposite, and she said, well, I've got to get my car fixed. It needs to go to a body shop. And I said, well, I've just been to Gordon's Auto Body because my car had been wrecked by our neighbor. And I said, it's great, you know, and it's really handy, and we both worked at St. Paul's, and I said, now I can drive you to work. The guy across from us was smiling, and we said, later on, and what do you do? He said, I actually own Gordon's Auto Body. I am Gordon. So, and he had just assessed my car. Actually, I didn't realize that. So he was newly divorced, and his daughter had sent him to this course. So we tell everybody we failed the course, because we ended up eventually getting married.
Yeah, oh, that's a nice story. So you went to Richmond, and now were the things that you needed to change there? Were you a change agent again in Richmond?
Yeah. I had never worked in a non-teaching hospital.
Yes.
And this was a typical community hospital, opened in 1966. An amazing designed hospital because it was double corridor. All the patients had outside windows. We had a very efficient delivery system of linen and everything to the room. They had introduced a patient classification system. I mean, this was amazing. But the doctors worked in the daytime only. When they went home at night, there were no doctors in the hospital.
No one on call?
No. Emergency was on. There was one doctor there.
Yeah.
And there would have been an ICU, an internist was on call for ICU. But no one slept in the hospital overnight, which scared the daylights out of me. So anyways, we started, and I realized when I went out there that when it opened in 66, it still was using some of the philosophy of doctor nurses and how things went. And so we started in, and we started looking at things that we could do, and certainly the patient classification system was an excellent one that they had out there. And it showed what we needed in nursing care, the hours we needed, and we had a good clinical or a clerical system in place, and it worked quite well, but we had a lot of attitude problems to work with, and so it was, and I was working with someone who was from the old school, and the director was from the old school, so it was again gradually working.
Amy Webster.
Amy Webster.
Yeah.
And she was traditional. And she said, well, you know, you can start making the changes as you want. So, although I was assistant director of nursing and did most of the hiring and shared an office with the staffing clerk, I wore uniform so that when I went upstairs to make rounds, I could go into the rooms and I often answered lights to sort of see what was going on. And with that, and with working with a tremendous head nurse group, unbelievable. And they knew how to work with the doctors. So we just gradually introduced change, and it was tough for a while.
New person, the kid on the block.
And the administrator at that time was traditional, very traditional, and So it was, you know, we constantly worked mm-hmm. on. But, you know, we introduced change over the while. And,
so what changes did you introduce?
Well, patient-centered care, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So that aspect, mm-hmm. And utilizing nurses for nursing, which was important. We had more male nurses out there than I had been working with before, which was very interesting.
Yeah.
And I had never worked with an extended care. We had 75 extended care patients, and that was really interesting. So we were working with care aides and also activity aides, which was new for me, you know, in terms of social activities.
Right. I think Richmond at that time didn't have as many of the Asian population.
No,
that happened later.
Yeah. And it was only a 226 bed hospital. Now, we did not have psychiatry, and that was being pushed because psychiatry was really needed out there. And also where there was this hospital down the street called the Richmond, what was it called before? The Richmond Hospital. I forget the name before. Anyways, we eventually acquired it. And it was an old, old private hospital. Richmond Private Hospital. And we eventually decided that that could become a psychiatry unit. So again, we had to hire people. Art Casa was just an amazing resource.
Mm-hmm. I remember that place because I was living in Richmond at that time.
And so it was down at Mineral Boulevard. So we were delivering food, we were delivering laundry, mm-hmm. we were medications, everything. And yet we were able to set up a psychiatric unit and an extended care unit in there. There wasn't many beds. So it wasn't efficient in terms of staff, but we had to have safe staff. And it was a challenge, mm-hmm. it really was. And then we came to 82, when we had the major hospital strike, and we had to close the unit. Because we just couldn't staff it, and we had to bring all those patients in and reassign them to other units and put psychiatry on to a unit, which again, they never had psychiatry mm-hmm. in the main hospital.
Right.
And at that time, we were looking at redeveloping the hospital because that was the whole idea was to get it. You know, it had units added on that were sort of spare units and waiting to be developed. So that was interesting.
Yeah,
we worked. Eventually, when I left, it was over 300 beds.
So
I eventually retired.
You retired. What year was that now?
1989. March of 89. Yeah.
Now, while you were there, did nurses stop wearing white uniforms? I guess.
Yes, they did. And one of the big things I set up was we had union management meetings. Mm-hmm. And one year, in the even years, management would chair it. In the odd years, the union member, a steward, would chair the meetings. Mm-hmm. We met on a regular basis. It wasn't once a month. It was every couple of months. And we brought up issues that they wanted to discuss. And one of them was the cap issue, because when I went there, everybody was very traditionally dressed in white with caps. And so I said, well, let's take it to a vote, which we did. Mm-hmm. Unbelievably, the OR decided that was the unit that said, well, everybody should still wear caps. They were the only units that didn't wear caps. They wore bonnets to cover their hair.
Exactly.
So we went into that. We eventually changed the colored uniform.
Yes.
And we changed.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to make sure the patients realized who we were.
Yeah.
And,
kind of interesting because it's been kind of
to change now.
Now, the head nurses were still, you know, there, and
that change hadn't occurred.
What is your impression today about do you believe that it was a good thing to get rid of head nurses or not? Some people have a very strong opinion about it.
No, I really felt that, I mean, our head nurses were very knowledgeable on what was going on, and we still had shift supervisors there. And those shift supervisors were clinically organized as well as I was blessed with the most amazing women, and they would make sure that whole place ran, and they worked very well with the doctors.
Do you have the names of some of these people?
Oh, Jean Matthews.
Yeah,
was certainly one of them.
Yeah.
Dorothy Bather.
Uh-huh.
Let me think. No, you got me on a few
of
them.
That's okay. I got.
But they were amazing women.
Because a lot of the nurses lived in the community too.
And that was interesting because a lot of their neighbors would be admitted as patients, so they had to be so careful.
Yes, right.
But they knew people, and the doctors knew. You know, they often socially knew the doctors, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a whole different, and there was a lot of social events in Richmond. We had dances and parties and, a lot of events.
So that was, that was sort of a very positive experience
it was.
For you being in Richmond.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Politics weren't quite as difficult as St. Paul's.
No, but they were eventually in the end because in 88 it got really dicey. I came back from a holiday. And I had at that point I really changed because I had to take on other roles. I wasn't just director of nursing. They changed the organization. I was called the assistant executive director then because I had to take on social work, psychology, which was a purchased contract service, admitting, and a few other sort of odd departments. Mm-hmm. That sort of because one assistant executive director did the hotel function. But didn't do admitting for some reason. That was considered patient-oriented. So I picked up some of those. So I came back, and by that time, because I was AED, I had two directors of nursing working with the Venus. One was the acute care, and the other was maternal child and psychiatry and extended care. So it was long-term type things. You know, we divided the two. That was Helen Hopkins was one, and Lee Smith was the other. Mm-hmm. Both very skilled. I came back. Helen had sent me, I guess, a phone message and said, on your desk you will see the board has decided that the nursing department has to be reduced by 12.5%. Your counterpart, the AED for hotel functions, was given a half an hour to clean out her desk 2 days ago, and the doctors want you to fire these nurses.
You came back to that?
I came back to that. So from that was, for about 3 or 4 months. At that point, I was also the president of the nurse administrators. I was in that role for a couple of years, so I leaned on my colleagues who were in the peer hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had to show that our staffing was not out of line with others, I didn't think. I spent a lot of time with the president of the medical staff and the MAC chairman because I said, if I have to reduce 12.5% of the nursing staff, it's going to impact on the patients, and I want you to know how it's going to be. So they came on board. I used to bring picnic lunches. I'd have them come at lunchtime, and we would go over. I wrote 4 papers on how that would impact. Didn't sleep very much. And by June, I had to reduce some of the staffing, but I didn't reduce it all. And we literally got through it. But I ended up with a breast lump, shingles, and a mitral valve prolapse.
Oh, my God.
And at that point, my husband said, you've been there for a few years. And we've been married about 7 years, 6 years at that point. And he said, do you really want to go on? And I said, I don't think so.
No.
So, and I knew if I gave them 9 months notice that I would, you know, I'd been there about 10 years, and I thought, I think that's it. You know, my body's telling me that.
Oh, absolutely.
I have to give it up.
Exactly.
So, they did a massive search and interviewed and hired a person, and she lasted 7 months. The MAC chair stepped down. Then the hospital board chairman realized that, in fact, there was some other problems. And asked the executive director to leave. He already had another job to go to. And that was, I mean, it was a mess in 89. So they had to bring in some acting.
So you left at the right time?
I did. I got out because some of my colleagues were being fired for strange things.
Yeah.
And like one of them was, she was a scapegoat. And it was the administrator that was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, I left. I felt I left. I had done as much I could do at the time, and I really couldn't see that I could do much more at that point.
No, your health was
so, and my health was telling me that.
Exactly.
So I retired in 89.
Yeah.
And then I did one other contract job. I worked for the RNABC in 1990 as basically the lobbyist, because that was the Peter Seaton Commission, the Royal Commission on Healthcare, that went around the province. So I went around ahead of time and made sure the nurses were preparing papers, and we had 278 papers presented.
Good.
In the various communities.
Right.
I worked there for about 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you became very involved in all kinds of other things, Gabby, and we're always so amazed how busy you are still after all this time.
Yeah.
So you
liked it
a little different.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, my husband, he liked to travel, which we did. And so in 90, we did a 3-month trip. And then in 92, unfortunately, he was diagnosed with leukemia. So he was unfortunately not responding to the chemotherapy. So the doctor said I could take him home to die, and we weren't going to give up. So he was with us until 95. February 95, we did another world cruise, and basically we lived. He said, "I'm going to live every day, not die every day." And so for 3 years, I was able to be with him.
Yeah.
And we did lots of traveling still then, and even the year he died, we did three different cruises the year just before he died. But basically, I was free to look after him, and that was really important.
Yeah.
But he also pushed me to keep up doing things because we knew he was going to die.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started getting involved more with the alumni, which I was interested in. And not as much with the history of nursing at that point, but certainly with my church and with High Cross, University of Women's Club. Yeah. And I wasn't involved in RDBC stuff at that point, although I had been before. So that just carried on, and I just kept going.
That is so going.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we should tell people, though, that Kathy, during you got an award, I think, from RNABC as well, didn't you?
Yeah,
award
I did.
Of Excellence from Nursing Administration as well. Any other awards that we don't know about?
No.
That you want to say? And you've been very active. You did with the Registered Nurses Foundation, though. You did a lot of work with
that's the other one I got involved in. Sorry. And that was when Gordon was still sick, actually. We used to have the meetings at my home at 6 in the morning. I did become active in the RNFBC, and they wanted to do a capital campaign. So I became the campaign chairman in 92. And we ran that campaign for about 3 years. So, we wanted to raise the trust funds, and we did. We were able to bring up immeasurably by going out and contacting nurses and anybody we could think of in terms of...
I remember you coming to that. You worked very hard on that.
We did. For 3 years, we worked really hard, and we really think we made a difference.
Yeah.
And now the RNF is really... well launched and had a number of trust funds. Yeah, and then eventually when Gordon died, he wanted a trust fund set up for nurses who were specializing in palliative care.
And then you got involved in the alumni. Was there a reason for you to sort of thought it was time to get involved?
I did. I thought it was involved. And I just started to get involved. I thought it was time. We had an active class. I wanted to make sure that our class was getting the information that they needed because we were doing these reunions every 5 years. So that's when I got involved.
I think you did the publicity and you were vice president.
And then I became vice president.
And then president for the last several years.
Forever. Yes. Perpetual.
So?
Yeah.
So what got you into the history of nursing group? Anything?
No, I'm just trying to think. No, I think part of it was the people that were involved. I just enjoyed, I attended some of the nursing events and became a member. And then I thought, well, maybe I could do something.
Yeah.
You know, once I retired, I had a bit more time. And then once I was a widow, I had more time. And I like to keep busy. So I guess that's
all came about. And you're president of that group, too. So you're president.
Too much.
No. So, Kathy, is there anything else that you, I mean, you've been very involved and you're still involved? Do you have anything that you would like to say to someone entering nursing today? Like, would you promote nursing? Would you recommend someone enter the profession at this point?
I would. I know it's a lot different than when we were there. But, and certainly I can see, you know, it's a fantastic job for mature people. Yeah, we've got lots of experiences. I think some of the programs, you know, now are accepting older students, which I think is a real plus.
Yeah.
Because we noticed that when we had older students, because we had some in various programs that came through, because we had students eventually at Richmond, they really did add something to their life experience and to. Yeah, I would still go back to nursing. In fact, I jokingly. When I come to nursing functions here, they say, "Oh, you're ready to do nights again. I'm too old now." But I enjoy nursing.
Yeah.
I really, and particularly a different type of nursing, like camp nursing. I could do.
Oh, you did. You did camp nursing too, though, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I took holidays to do camp nursing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's really rewarding because it was for a camp nursing. It was interesting. The kids that came with pills that never needed them during camp. Many of them were mental type pills, and I thought, what are 11 and 12 year olds doing with pills like this?
Yeah.
And also with parents.
Yeah.
You know, so we were able to work with these kids and just let them have fun.
And then,
they never seemed to need to come and see me, which I thought was very interesting.
Well, that was helpful.
Yeah,
very good.
Yeah. And I know that nursing is very challenging. It really is now, and it's not for the faint of heart. Physically and mentally, it's a challenge.
Anything else that we'd like to add?
My two nieces are not nurses, but my sister is. So.
Oh, your sister?
Yeah.
We forgot to talk about your family.
My sister, she is a nurse, and she works at the new Diamond Center, the one that's just been opened. She's in long-term care.
And what's your name?
Susan Raymer.
Okay.
And she's a VCI key grad. So she had many of the VGH instructors taught her in VCI. So our brothers were in it to longer ring microphone.
Okay. Well, Kathy, thank you very much for the interview. It's been very, and you've certainly had an extremely interesting career and certainly a very strong leader. And I think you've indicated through the interview some of the changes that you brought about and how you fought for nursing, fought for improving patient care, and also to to try and improve relationships with the physicians. Sometimes people tell me that they have some negative feelings about doctors, but I think that it's important to, as you indicated, to work with them and try to promote change.
Yeah, especially if you can get them to laugh. So many times things are serious. I remember one thing we did at Richmond. We had a Halloween, a pumpkin decorating contest. And I went in a blonde wig with freckles all over it and in a dirndl outfit that I'd worn as square dancing. And nobody recognized me. And it was so fun. I mean, they talked about this for days after. And we had doctors and everybody getting involved.
Yeah.
And it really was fun.
Yeah. A little humor goes a long way.
It does. It goes a long way.
But you have to be willing to take a risk in doing that.
Yeah. Dressing up in this
Well, Kathy, we wish you well. I know you'll be continuing with your volunteer work for many years to come.
I hope so.
And we thank you for participating in our interview and with our oral history project.
You're very welcome. Please.